It is Scorchio in Salford. It's warm right across the UK this afternoon. Welcome to Wednesday's programme. Hope you've had a good old day and maybe spent some of it in the sun. I've got some terrific guests for you lined up today. As usual, join in through Twitter, BBG Richie on Twitter it is.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, Richard and Fred Fairbrass are legends. The term legend is often overused. A multi-platinum award-winning group, Richard and Fred, with their music featured in over 50 films, Brit Awards coming up, well, out, coming out the wazoo, and songs included in the PRS Century of Song book. Great guys. They've been on the programme before. They're back today. Anti-lockdown, I think it's fair to say about Richard and Fred. They'll be with me in the second hour. I'm going to hear one or two of their tunes as well. Why not? Before that, an old friend of mine has not been on the programme for nearly a year is back. We are political polar opposites, I suppose. I'm talking about David Vance, the editor at biasedbbc.org and the man who launched Alt News Media. I have a lot of time for David. He joins me this hour in about 25 minutes. We'll have a good chat about lots of things. Presumably, we'll have a little chat about wokeness. Yeah. You can't have enough wokeness in your life. Love a bit of wokeness. You're warm. I'm sweltering in the studio, but I have a big grin on my face, on my countenance, because as of Friday, there'll be no more warm studio. I'm going to keep saying this. Because I'm air conditioning what otherwise is a state-of-the-art studio, it just doesn't have aircon. But it will on Friday. So I can put up with the heat of today, because it is bloody warm. And it's warm in here now. Okay then. Health Secretary Matt Hancock was in the Commons this afternoon. He opened the debate on extending so-called Freedom Day from June 21st to July 19th. I don't know why they need to debate it. The Labour Party has indicated already that it will support him. There will be some backbench Tories who will vote against the government, but there's no chance that it won't be extended to July the 19th. They have dubbed July the 19th Terminus Day. It's supposed to all end all of these restrictions. That's a massive lie. That's a double whopper with bacon and cheese, extra gherkins and loads of tomatoes and lettuce. It's a lie. Not going to change or to end on July 19th. We know that. Now, this is hugely interesting. Hancock opened. When they drone on, they do take interventions from other MPs. So Mark Harper is a Conservative Party MP and a colleague of Matt Hancock's. He also chairs the COVID Recovery Group. This is a group of backbench Tories that do not support lockdown. So Hancock is doing his thing, and then he's interjected. He's interrupted by Mark Harper.
Can I just ask him a question about what we expect to get achieved in the 4 weeks? I think I'm right in saying that there are 1.3 million people in priority groups 1 to 9 who've yet to have a second dose of the vaccination. Now, the good point is that means we've vaccinated 96% of people in those groups. But I just wonder, after 4 weeks, I doubt we're going to get to 100%. There's still going to be a significant number of people in those groups not vaccinated with two doses. And at that point, there's still going to be some risk. And my worry, and the worry of others, is that we're going to get to this point in 4 weeks' time, and we're just going to be back here all over again extending the restrictions, and that's what we're concerned about.
No, on the contrary, that is our view of how far through the vaccination programme we need to get to. We are not aiming to eradicate this virus in this country, because that is not possible. And indeed, in the parts of the country where it's been tried, it's been found to be not possible.
He's lying.
And we are aiming to live with this virus like we do with flu. And in fact, as of midnight last night, I can give my right arm for an update, there are now 1.2 million people in who are over 50 and 4.4 million over 40s who've had that first jab but not the second. And we seek to get a second jab into a majority of these, not all, but a majority of them, by the 19th of July. And by, if I just finish this point and then I'll come on to, and by taking that pause in the step, the estimate is that we can save thousands of lives. But the estimate, I can tell my right arm friend, is also that taking further time, a further the pause for longer, it is would is not estimated to save many more lives, because the level of protection, especially amongst the over 50s, who are, of course, as we all know, those who are most likely to die from this disease. I'll take the honourable gentleman.
Well, before you do take the honourable gentleman, let's hear that massive whopper. This is a triple whopper with extra fries, a massive milkshake, and, well, onion rings and chicken nuggets as well. Listen to this line.
The level of protection, especially amongst the over 50s, who are, of course, as we all know, those who are most likely to die from this disease. I'll take...
No. Over 50s are not likely to die from COVID-19 at all. That's a lie. That's a lie going by the government's own figures. Massive lies. Right? So he said we're not going to extend beyond July 19th, but look, you know, can't give any guarantees. We don't think we will. He then gave away to Labour's Chris Bryant. He's a Welsh MP.
I'm very grateful. The Secretary of State knows that I broadly agree with what he's doing today, but he referred just now to...
God forbid there's any opposition. I broadly agree with the Secretary of State in what he's trying to do today. God forbid that the Labour Party, a party that's supposed to represent working people, small businessmen and small businesswomen and workers, God forbid they might try and put a stop to this madness. No, we'll support you, all right. But I have a question on flu.
Now to us having to live with the virus as we do with flu. With flu, we do not require people to self-isolate. We don't ask them to test and trace. My understanding is that the government is intending to keep test and trace on a mandatory, statutory basis all the way through the rest of this year and possibly until the end of March, or am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. They're planning on keeping these measures forever and a day. Brian says, listen, you compare this to flu, but it's not, because we don't expect people to test, trace and isolate when they think they have the flu. Is it going to go on and on and on and on and on? Ariston and on and on and on and on. I'm an 80s boy. I remember those advertisements. Well...
Well, with flu, of course, if you have symptomatic flu and are ill, then people do tend to stay at home. Of course, we haven't done that on a mandatory basis before, but
we might do it in the future.
But it is advisable that if you have symptoms of flu, then you should stay at home. We are, in fact, for contacts, we're already piloting, as he probably knows, we're piloting that for vaccinated people, instead of having to isolate as a contact, you go into a testing regime. And that's the approach that we...
That's your reward for getting vaccinated. Do you hear this lunacy? And it hasn't even gotten mad yet, because I've got some stuff for you in the next few minutes. This is what you've got to look forward to if you submit yourself to being double jabbed by that lunatic. Now, I know he's not going to physically be present, and he's not going to be the one injecting you with the pus and the shit. No, he's not. But this is his programme. I know it's not his programme, but he's the front man for it. And this is what you've got coming if you submit to the vaccines.
That for vaccinated people, instead of
Instead of having a life, which we promised you, because we said if you get vaccinated, things will go back to normal. That's the yarn we spun you, you stupid bastards. Instead of going back to normal...
Having to isolate as a contact, you go into a testing regime.
You go into a testing regime.
And that's the approach that I'm very attracted to for the future, especially as more and more people get vaccinated, because we know that the risks once you've been vaccinated is so much lower.
So if you take the vaccine, this is what they said back in late winter, have the vaccine and we will cry freedom when the elderly and the sick have the vaccine. Have the vaccine and we'll cry freedom. It's all done. Now have the vaccine and you'll go into a testing regime. Yeah. It's 5:09. Yes. Not an eye or an eyelid even batted in the House of Commons today. Wow. Then he gave way to his own colleague, Liam Fox, who's had a few cabinet jobs, hasn't he? International Development Secretary, or was he the Trade Secretary? I think he was the Trade Secretary one time. He also had the Brexit gig one time, did he? Liam Fox, then.
I'm extremely grateful to my right honourable friend for giving way. I wonder if he can give us a little...
I fucking hate that pomposity, do you? I'm extremely grateful for my right honourable friend for forgiving. Just get on with it! Ask the fucking question, Fox. And he asks the question.
Information about the...
Yeah, he wants to know about hospitalisations right now. What is their vaccine status? This is what he wants to know. Are there people in hospital right now with a respiratory ailment? If so, what is their status?
The rise in hospitalisations that he mentioned. Of those who are being hospitalised, how many are in the younger age group who are not yet, were not yet eligible for the vaccine? Yes. And how many were above that age? In other words, those who were able to get the vaccine but chose not to get it.
Yes. And my right honourable friend makes a really important point. And the answer is that the majority are in the younger age group who have not yet had the chance to be vaccinated. Just under one-fifth of those entering, going into hospital in the last week have had both jabs. About a fifth have had one jab. The majority haven't had any. The majority...
Yeah, he just admitted there that 20% of people going to hospital have had two jabs. Does anybody have the cojones or the testiclay? The bollocks, basically, to ask him. Do you not wonder if the 20% who ended up in hospital after having the two jabs... Do you not think, Health Secretary there, that maybe the jabs had something to do with their illness? No. No, there's no courage, you see. Nobody's in the
mask. Going into hospital in the last week have had both jabs. About
20% have had both jabs. 20% have had both jabs.
One-fifth of those entering, going into hospital in the last week have had both jabs.
One-fifth. I've had two jabs, right? It gets worse.
About a fifth have had one jab.
About a fifth have had one jab. So nearly 40% of everybody going to hospital has had at least one of these miraculous vaccines, which are not vaccines. Wonderful. 4 out of 10 in hospital at the moment have had one of these treatments. Again, you know, if you're a backbencher, I know you would do it. I would do it. Home Secretary, let me interject there. Yeah, are you out of your mind? No.
The majority haven't had any. The majority are...
That's not the majority. That's about 60%. That's not the majority. Well, it's the majority. Of course, 60% versus 40 is the majority. It's not a great majority, though, is it? Not really. It's kind of spooky, really.
Under the age of 50 and have not yet had the opportunity to have both jabs. But I think that there is a material difference.
Listen, there is a material difference.
In the... between the state's responsibility to offer the vaccine to all adults and the duty that we have when somebody has not been offered the vaccine is greater than the duty we have when we have offered a vaccine but somebody has chosen not to take it up. And there is a...
Did you get that? You did. That's very important that you understand that.
And there is a material difference between those two situations that I think my right honourable friend was getting at.
Nobody in the media, apart from yours truly, and nobody in the House of Commons picked up on this.
And the duty that we have when somebody has not been offered the vaccine is greater than the duty we have when we have offered a vaccine but somebody has chosen not to take it up. And there is a material difference between those two situations that I think my right honourable friend was getting at.
There is a difference in the duty that we have as the health department to somebody who hasn't yet been offered the vaccine. God love them, it's not their fault. So our duty of care to them is different than it is to those who have been offered a vaccine but have turned it down. Now that's headline news, that. That's the quote of the week, not a dicky bird. And Andrea Leadsom, another former frontbench woman, Conservative MP, she immediately asked to interject because she wanted to double down on what Hancock had just said.
Can I just take what our...
You really need to listen to this.
...honourable friend said one step further. If I choose not to have, say, a yellow fever jab when I'm going to a place that suffers yellow fever... The government of the United Kingdom takes no interest whatsoever in my illness status. So when my right honourable friend says that he has less of a duty, surely what he means is he has no duty at all. It is for people to take up the vaccine.
Right. When you said you have less of a duty of care to somebody who has refused the vaccine, surely you actually mean you have no duty of care at all. It's up to people to take the vaccine. Here's Hancock's answer.
Up to a point, and the point is that...
Up to a point.
Should that, if should you take that as an absolute principle, then there is a challenge should there be an overwhelming demand on the NHS that would impact on others. And, of course, with a communicable disease, there is an impact on others in terms of spreading the disease. So we do have to have an eye to that. That's why I phrased it as I did. But in terms of the argument that my right-hand friend's putting, I think she and I concur in the broad thrust of the case being made.
Again?
I think she and I concur in the broad thrust of the case being made.
Wow. I wrote about this as quick as I could because I was trying to edit audio to get on air for 5 o'clock. And I put an eye-catching headline on my article, which said, Hancock, quote, we have no duty of care at all to vaccine refuseniks. That is borne out by what you just heard in the House of Commons. I broadly concur with what you just said. Leadsom said, you've got no duty of care at all to those who don't take the vaccine. He said he broadly concurs. Is there one or two enemies of the Richie Allen Show? And by enemies now, I don't mean truthers, because I couldn't care less about truthers. But one or two people in the mainstream media are alleging that it's fake news on my part. It is not fake news on my part. Hancock could not have been clearer. Leadsom said, when my right honourable friend says that he has less of a duty, surely what he means is that he has no duty at all. It is for people to take up the vaccine. After starting off by saying up to a point, and the point is you should take that as an absolute principle, blah, 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 there is a challenge if there is an overwhelming demand on the NHS, he went on to say, in terms of the argument that my right honourable friend is putting, I think she and I concur in the broad thrust of the case being made. Now, if you've listened to me long enough, you will know I've been talking for some time about how healthcare is meant to change in the medium to long term and how it will move away from treating people when people need treatment. So, in other words, when things pop up, right? Shit happens, right? So that's how we treat health. It's how we should treat health. It's how the health service of any country should operate. It should be there for its citizens, who pay for it, by the way, when they need it. There should be no relationship outside of that. You pay income tax, you pay national insurance. And if you break an elbow or a foot, God forbid, or if you contract an illness of some sort, you might get diabetes, you might get this, you might get that. The health service should be there with open doors for you because you pay for it. We know there is a very sinister agenda to move away from that. To move, as the head of the MHRA, the Medicines and Healthcare Regulatory Agency, a woman called June Rain, who's in it up to her bosoms with Bill Gates, by the way, they're on the record of saying they want to move away from the old model and move into a new era of prevention. And prevention comes in the form of vaccines. Lots of them. Vaccines for everything, down to cold sores. I kid you not. And what you heard Matt Hancock do today in the House of Commons and Andrea Leadsom was basically fire the opening shot across the bows of the nation. We are going to be offering you vaccines a lot in the near future. If you don't take them, fuck you. That's okay. We'll leave you by the side of the street. We won't just do that. We'll also refuse you or deny you the right to have a social life. We'll deny you the right to go places and to interact with people and engage in commercial activity. I'm not making this up. I'm not Alex Jones. I'm a journalist, a real one. I've been doing this for years. That's what he said today. That is what he said. And when she said, what you really mean is, he doubled down and agreed with her. That's where it's meant to go. And this is the beginning of it. We absolve ourselves of any responsibility for you. Of course, they say that, but they don't really mean it. And this is obviously tied in, of course, with social crediting and good citizenship and getting scores. You know, you'll have a social credit score the way you have a credit score. You go to a, I don't know, an electrical shop and you want to get a big old television. And like most people, you don't have £2,000 in your bank account. So you try and do a deal on some sort of APR. Give it to me interest free, or give it to me at a low interest rate and I'll buy it. They'll do a credit check on you. And that's how it's going to be in the future. This guy's not a good citizen. He didn't have the vaccine. For anything, he didn't have the vaccine for obesity. He didn't have the vaccine for diabetes. He didn't have the vaccine for cold sores. Is the gag, right? But you go to a search engine now and you look at the vaccines that are in development and you won't believe your eyes. It's dystopia, folks, you know. There's no other way of putting it. I try and put a jolly old perspective on it most days, try and elicit a few giggles out of you. But this week the giggles are in short supply because it's getting serious now, is what it is. It's getting very serious. Yeah. And just to double down on the Labour Party not opposing any of this, Jonathan Ashworth is the Labour Shadow Health Secretary. Each, the opposition party, for every minister and every cabinet secretary, it has a shadow one to follow them, right? I don't mean to follow them around, but to watch what they're doing and argue with them, in theory, to oppose what they're doing. So Ashworth has got the health brief for Labour. He was asked a question when he was speaking. He was interrupted and he was asked a question by a former Conservative health minister. Listen.
I'm just keen to explore with him. I know the official opposition's position will be to support these today, but would he be happy to see the terminus on July the 19th, or would he like to see it maybe at the end of September when the entire adult population will be double jabbed? Or would he prefer to see the end of next year when the G7 think the rest of the world will be vaccinated? Which would his instinct be?
Of course I want to see Terminus Day on the 19th, although I'm not sure if we are going to see Terminus Day on the 19th because...
Why is that now? Again, you see?
Of course I want to see Terminus Day on the 19th, although I'm not sure if we are going to see Terminus Day on the 19th because the Honourable Gentleman, who is he's always well informed, will have no doubt read the explanatory notes which indicate that this four-week period is to assess the data and the four tests will be applied at the end of that four-week period. That is not quite the terminus day that the Prime Minister and the Secretary of State have indicated.
There's Jonathan Ashworth, Labour Shadow Health Secretary, who will vote with the government to extend by 4 weeks, giving it to you in black and white. There won't be any terminus day on July 19th, not according to the exploratory notes. They're going to use the period to assess the data. Of course, they're going to use it to apply excruciating pressure on people who have refused the poison, but they've got no intention of saying to people on July the 19th, this pandemic is over. Now, first of all, you and I know there never was a pandemic. We know that. So we know that. So just put that to one side. They're not going to say on July 19th, it's all over, folks. Well done. Thanks for doing your duty to yourself and to your country. Throw away the masks now. Scrap the social distancing. Get back to the way it was in February 2020. No chance. There's no chance at all. Go to my website, richieallen.co.uk. Read and share that article. Hancock, we have no duty of care at all to vaccine refuseniks. It's the way it's going to be from now on in. You better wise up to it. You're with the Richie Allen Radio Show. It is live from Scorchio Salford, 26 degrees this afternoon. Gorgeous weather. Here's some Barry White, then I've been digging out some summery tunes.
I've heard people say that...
David Vance next.
Too much of anything.
Can't get enough of your life, babe.
Yeah, that is the music from Barry White and Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Babe. 28 minutes past 5 o'clock. It is, of course, the 16th of June 2021. Just before we welcome David back to the programme, do drop a tweet to BBG Richie on Twitter. A lot of tweets about what Matt Hancock said. I'll ask David for his opinion on that. I've got the audio lined up so David can hear it if he hasn't heard it already. It's been, sadly, nearly a year since David was on. He's the editor of biasedbbc.org and atangledweb.org. And he was heavily involved in setting up Alt News Media as well, which I recommend that you check out. Last time we spoke, it was just after he was banned from Twitter for nothing more than a storm in a teacup, really. There was a lot of banning going on back then. There's a lot going on now. But I'm delighted to welcome him back, my old pal, David Vance. David, welcome. How are you?
Yeah, I'm absolutely fine, Richie. Never better. I'm doing extremely well. How are you doing?
I'm hanging on in there, to be honest. We spoke quite a bit late last summer about this situation. Yeah. I think both of us were under no illusion that it was going to end anytime soon. And here we are now in June, in the height of summer. Well, not quite the height of summer, but it's gorgeous out there right across the UK, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland. It's great in the Republic. Nobody's sick, really. I've got contacts in hospitals in the Northwest. And here we are. This doesn't look like it's ending. How do you feel about this? Where are you with it? How are you coping with it, to be honest?
Well, you sort of said, you know, sort of it's the 16th of June 2021, but it feels more like the 16th of June 1984 to me. And in fact, every date is 1990 is date stamped 1984 for me, Richie, because we have fallen into this sort of authoritarian abyss. Or maybe we've been deliberately pushed into it, and we can chat about that. But, you know, the thing is, all my illusions have been stripped away. I have no illusions left about the kind of tyrannical order under which we exist. That's how I see it. I see the whole thing as just one vast tyranny. So nothing that Matt Hancock says surprises me. Nothing Johnson says surprises me. I'm beyond surprised, and I don't think I'm alone in that. You know, I think eyes are well and truly open. And when we did speak last time, Richie, you know, we didn't have illusions then. We surely can't have any illusions almost, you know, God, almost a year on. So, however, I think there's the requirement for sort of resolution, for resilience, determination, not to bend down and accept the order which is being imposed upon us. That's what I think.
Brilliant. I'll ask you about, you know, opposition to it shortly. I love the fact that people get out in great numbers and go to London and go to Belfast and go to Manchester and Dublin. I love it. And I would never criticise them for doing it, ever. I get a bit of stick for this because some of them think I am criticising them. I'm not. But I think you need to do a little bit more than, you know, than March. We might talk about that. I don't know if you're aware of this. I'm the only one who's reported it, and it's only blind luck that I was listening to it just as I was getting some. I was editing audio before coming on at 5 o'clock, and I heard Matt Hancock in the House of Commons. He was opening the debate, laughably, the debate about extending this madness till July 19th. It's all done and dusted. The fix is in, David, as we well know.
Oh, yeah.
So Hancock was talking, and he was asked an innocuous question by Liam Fox about the status of people who are in hospital right now. And Hancock said this. He talked about, you'll be able to hear this loud and clear now, it's a very short clip. He talked about how the vaccinated and those yet to be vaccinated will be treated against those who have refused the vaccine. And you think you've heard tyranny? Well, this is tyrannical. This is what he said, Hancock, today. Have a listen to this.
And the duty that we have when somebody has not been offered the vaccine is greater than the duty we have when we have offered a vaccine but somebody has chosen not to take it up. And there is a material difference between those two situations that I think my right honourable friend was getting at.
Yeah, the duty, David, that we have to people who have not yet been offered the vaccine, so it's not their fault, is different to the duty that we have for those who have refused it. Wait for this, David. Andrea Leadsom then said this to Hancock. Listen.
Can I just take what our honourable friend said one step further? If I choose not to have, say, a yellow fever jab when I'm going to a place that suffers yellow fever, the government of the United Kingdom takes no interest whatsoever in my illness status. So when my right honourable friend says that he has less of a duty, surely what he means is he has no duty at all. It is for people to take up the vaccine.
No duty at all, David. It is for people to take up the vaccine. And Hancock then said, up to a point, he said to Andrea Leadsom, up to a point, but he finished by saying this. This is madness.
I think she and I concur in the broad thrust of the case being made.
Now, I'm not going to ask you. I've made a couple of mistakes in recent weeks. I've asked people, have they had their vaccine? I've done it innocently, forgetting that it's none of my bloody business. So I'm not going to ask you whether you have or whether you haven't.
You don't need to ask me. I can categorically state I haven't had it. I won't be taking it. The day after hell freezes over, Richie, will be the date on which I take my so-called vaccine. So that's not happening.
You and me both. What do you think of what he said there? That's tyranny on steroids, what he said there.
It is tyranny on steroids, and it's also incredibly typical of what is coming out of Westminster. You know, because there's no opposition to this essentially in that place of government. I mean, but it's fascinating. You know, so they actually, from what the Gow leader Hancock said, there's like he wants to have like a double standard within the NHS, and Leadsom wants the NHS to completely shun out those who don't want to take the experimental therapy. Let me tell you this. I agree with her. Let's do that. And Andrea Leadsom, can I then opt out of paying all my taxes to the NHS? Yeah. Can we do a deal? Not a penny to the NHS, and then I sure as hell won't ever want to go near the NHS, which actually, Richie, I don't want to go near at the moment anyway, even if I needed to.
Yeah.
So, but you're right. You're absolutely right in what you said there about Hancock and Leadsom and the rest of them. I mean, the curtain has been lifted. And we see this is the most authoritarian, if not totalitarian regime Britain has ever seen in certainly modern history, you know, and that's the reality of it. And it's compounded, Richie, by the fact there's no opposition to it. So the political class have been shown to be a bunch of cards, sycophants, and worse, much, much worse than that. And that's the truth of the matter. So, you know, that clip is enlightening that you played there. That exchange between them is enlightening. There was another exchange which took place in the Commons where, I don't know, Richie, if you picked it up, where the Conservative MP, Mark Harper did challenge back on what he sees as the preparation within government for autumn and winter restrictions coming back.
Yeah, I've got that. Yeah, I played that earlier in a monologue segment. I played it. That's right. They've advertised. They've budgeted to advertise this next year, don't they? As far as
Absolutely.
I understand. They've no intentions of this going away. And then you have to wonder. And let me just remind our listeners, we've got David Vance on. Go to altnewsmedia.net. David is also on Parler. And I think you're on Telegram, David, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm on Telegram. And also, you can get me, actually, I've got a podcast. If you just go on any of the podcast channels, David Vance is on podcast as well. I'm everywhere but Twitter.
Everywhere,
Richie,
but Twitter.
Yeah. Everywhere.
You asked the question last year of Marcus. David got banned from Twitter last year. We're not going to go over this again. We had a good kind of matey argument about this last year. We're not going to go over it again. But David asked a question of Marcus Rashford about, you know, school dinners and about parents abandoning families and stuff like that. It was cheeky. It reminded me of Kevin Myers, the old Sunday Times and Times writer. I knew what you were doing. I knew the woke wouldn't know what you were doing. And anyway, look, the inevitable happened. David was banned. He shouldn't have been banned, but he was. But you can find him in lots of other places, as I said. I did hear Harper. What's really going on then? Do you now subscribe? I don't mean do you now subscribe. You'll answer for yourself. Is this about transforming utterly the way we live, the human experience, and moving us into, I don't know, some sort of post-human existence world? That sounded terrible, but I can't phrase it any better.
Yeah, well, you know, Richie, certainly we are being moved into a very dark place. Those of us with eyes can see it. And it is like even simple things, like, for example, people talk about, oh, Boris always gone and moved Freedom Day forward. Back from, you know, the 21st of June to the 19th of July. Hey, listen, folks, heads up. If they can give you your freedom back, that means you were never free in the first place. You're captive. The UK is a captive society. After a year and a year and a half of this, Richie, unfortunately, a large number of fellow citizens here have become automatons, hypnotized, seduced, entranced, captured by propaganda pumped out by the absolutely toxic media. And that's why shows like yourself and others do such a good job trying to provide balance to make sure that at least – some people get the other opinions than that which Boris Johnson and Matt Hancock and the so-called behavioral scientists want to put out. So we have a seduced society of people who are just essentially terrorized by behavioral scientists into doing what the government wants. Where does that lead us, Richie, which is your question? It leads us into an authoritarian, controlled society. And where that leads to then is anyone's guess. But, you know, it's going to be very difficult to get out of this one. Really, really tricky, I think. The only thing is, I think there's a percentage of us hold the line. We've held it, Richie, as you have, you know, throughout this. And I think the people like us, we've endured so much and we've got this far. And, you know, I don't think we will fall. Yet, having said that, you know, you saw today as well about, oh, Hancock wants now to have mandatory jabs for people working in healthcare settings.
Yeah.
Well, hey, whatever happened to my body, my choice, Richie? What happened to that?
The thing about this is, as well, by their own admission, these, you described them perfectly, experimental therapies. They're in trial for another year, at least 2 years, 2023.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't somebody be entitled to say, well, no, you can't impose something on me that you can't guarantee me that in 3, 4, or 5 years time that it won't cause me complications. Vaccines normally take 10 years before they're, you know, before they're given a green light and they're injected into people's arms. That's maddening, that. And I did hear a couple of NHS, I heard some nice people today on talk radio, particularly there was a nice nurse, a male nurse on talk radio, and he said, you know what's going to happen? He said, if this is rubber stamped, which it will be, he said, we're going to have a staff shortage crisis, the likes of which they never imagined.
Yeah. Well, 2 points on that. I've also heard some people in sort of healthcare settings saying to themselves, saying that, Richie, well, if they're going to make us do this and we don't want to do this, we just go and get a job stacking shelves in Tesco's or Sainsbury's or somewhere without, where we don't have the stress, we don't have the pressure, and we don't have the we don't have the job. So there's that aspect. But the bit that really bothers me, and I think this will bother your listeners as well, if they can establish the precedent, Richie, of forcing one group to have the jab, then which other groups will they then start to force to get
teachers,
the jab?
Teachers, firefighters. And what about those ladies and gentlemen who leave nursing? And like you said, I'll go to Amazon, I'll go to Tesco. But you know, my great mate Hayden Hewitt, who ran liveleak.com for years, Hayden said to me a long time ago, the private sector will drive this. How long, David, before the Tesco bosses and the Sainsbury bosses say to their staff, we're insisting now that you get a vaccine?
Well, yes, a great question. But that way then, if you're right, and there's a great possibility you may be right, then how long, Richie, before they come to people like me and say, you're going to have it, David? You know, even sorry, there's no more choice. You know, am I going to be held down and injected against my will? Is that what the UK will descend to? Because if they try that, I still think there's enough of us to give them a problem. Because if, Richie, everyone is as crazy and happy about getting the jab as they pretend, they wouldn't need to be doing this propagandizing on this scale.
Well said, well said. Can I ask you a question? I posed this question to my listeners last night. I'll pose it to you now. You've brought it up. Are they lying when they say that they've gotten 47 million jabs, one dose? They've done 47 million one doses and they've done 30-something million two doses. That sounds too good to be true. Do you think they're overinflating those figures?
Yeah. I think if anyone believes the stats that are coming out of government, seriously, they need to take a good look in the mirror. I don't believe that for 1 second. I think that, again, and this is driven by those behind the scenes, by the behavioural scientists advising, maybe even controlling government, that if they push these lines, these narratives, like, oh, yeah, you know, 47 million or whatever it is, I've got it, that then puts a psychological pressure on the people who haven't had it to want to get it. There's no doubt about that. But then again, Richie, I mean, I know, you know, depending which audience we're talking to, but I saw a headline, I think it was in the Irish Times, where is it 400,000 people in Ireland aren't going to get the benefit, the so-called benefits of having had the jab, because apparently the benefits no longer include being able to travel, international travel, if you've only had one jab. I think I saw that headline. So again, people are being played in Ireland, in Britain, across the Western world, maybe not so much in the Eastern world, but in the Western world. And I'm really concerned about the fact that, if you like, Richie, the Anglosphere, you know, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Britain, and Ireland, if you like, these countries are becoming fascist states.
Yeah.
Really remarkable, where the rule of law, out the window.
Arbitrary measures announced every other day, things that make no sense whatsoever. You know, you can go into a football stadium, but you can't have more than 20 people at a funeral or 30 people at a wedding. I want to ask you this. I want to lob, I shouldn't say a grenade. I'm talking, David's a loyalist, by the way, and I'm a Republican. I'm not as committed to Republicanism as I once was, and I'll tell you why. I have felt for years, I know you disagree with this, and it's good that my listeners get a different perspective than mine. That's why I invite people like you on. We agree on many things, but there are things we don't agree on, and that's brilliant. It's brilliant, yeah, for my listeners. Look, I have a feeling that some of these agendas have been around a long time. And I think there's plenty of circumstantial evidence that these agendas have been around. And I think one of the things that has served these agendas is identity politics, divide and conquer. And I've said this to you before, and I know you disagree, and I'm asking you again because you articulate your argument very, very well. But I think that we've been turned against one another, you know, men against men, women against women, on any issue you can think of, whether it be in our country, politics over the country, United Ireland, you know, Northern Ireland being part of the UK, whether it be sexual politics, whatever. I just think we've been played. And I think because I don't think humanity has ever been as divided. And that suits them, the people that are foisting this agenda on us. Yeah. And I just wonder, were we manipulated all along? And maybe we're not, not that we're not big enough, but it's a very difficult, bitter pill to swallow to admit that, yes, we were being played against one another for a long time. While we were doing that, they were tightening the screws. Well, I know you mostly disagree with that, so go ahead.
Well, I'm going to surprise you. No, I don't disagree with that at all. No, I don't. I believe what you've just said is pretty much on the money. And actually, Richie, over the past, it started to happen a bit over Brexit, to be fair, but it's accelerated 100 miles an hour since the imposition of COVID and restrictions and all that, and the removal of liberty. I find myself, as you say, a Northern Ireland unionist, loyalist type person, having vast amounts in common with good friends, people like yourself, who hold, let's say, Irish Republican views.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden, again, we completely see that this is not about unionism and republicanism. This is much more basic.
Yeah.
This is about my right to be a free man, or someone in Dublin's right to be a free woman. That's what unites us. So they talk about their Great Reset. Well, okay, let's have a Great Reset then. And I think it's happened already. I think a lot of us now, Richie, see that, as you say, they love to conquer and divide. That's the way all tyrants operate. That's number one rule of being a tyrant. You know, you divide and conquer and a few bread and circuses, and that makes it work. So I think we've all woken up and realized that, hey, look, let's put all those things to one side. You know, you may be right, you may be wrong.
It doesn't matter,
if I have to be given experimental therapies that haven't gone to, as you say, a medium to long-term trial stage. It doesn't matter if I can't travel without having a digital ID. It doesn't, you know, these are the big issues. These are the matters of fundamental freedom, which have been taken. And that's why I think, again, they want the reset. Let's give them the reset by people like us and who may, in other circumstances, have disagreements. Put them all to one side and say, you know something, I don't care. What I care about is I want my freedom back, and I'm not going to have internationalist, globalist filth removing it, which is exactly what's happened in the year and a half. So, yeah, that's what I think. So I agree with you, actually.
Brilliantly put. I was watching The Life of Brian a few weeks back, and the scene when the Judean People's Front and the People's Front of Judea meet under the city. And they've got the same aim. They want to get rid of Caesar. They want to get Pilate out of the city. Yeah. They're fed up. and they just end up battering nine kinds of horses shit out of one another, and the Centurions just arrest them. And as I was watching it, I had an epiphany. I saw that's, and I don't mean that's Republican versus Unionist. I don't mean that's everything. That's gay versus straight, Christian versus Muslim. We've all been suckered into it. And all along, we've had an enemy. All of us. None of us, because we did believe it. All of us were conditioned in some way to believe that our own group was somehow more of a victim. But now we see clearly, I think, that no, we're all under the jackboot here, all of us. And maybe, I love what you said about the Great Reset. If we could turn that on its head and do something special with that.
You're right, Richie. You know, for example, you take the issue of Muslim people, for example. And yes, I have my differences on things such as, you know, aspects of Islam and whatnot. But actually, I'm really pleased about the fact that in the UK, I think the Muslim community has been what the establishment called vaccine hesitant. Yeah. They have been reluctant to allow the government to stick what they want in their bodies. Well done them. I only wish more of Christian Brits and other Brits had the same fortitude. So again, Richie, you know, we find new bedfellows. The so-called BAME community, I respect the fact that they have not fallen over. And maybe that's to do with the fact that you begin to learn that, you know, these groups, which in many instances can come from environments or other countries where you don't trust government, They don't trust the British government. And boy, are they right not to trust the British government. So I stand by my Muslim friends, my gay friends. As you say, everything's been redefined. And that's if you like, there is positive things come out of this, even if it's dark, and it's very, very dark. But there is positive things. And you see it on social media as well. I can see all the realignments happening. And it's good. It happens the other way as well, Richie. You mean, there are people, I'll not name them, who individuals who have shown themselves up to be men and women of straw. So a lot of those, and certainly in this area that we do of, you know, commentating and putting stuff out. But the alignments are happening anyway. And on balance, I think, well, that's a good thing. I would rather know who can be trusted and who cannot be trusted when push comes to shove. Well, we're long past shove. And we know who can be trusted.
Absolutely right. Couple of quick questions before I ask you about, you know, maybe civil disobedience. Because I love them. I do love the marches. I love the fact you'll turn on Ruptly or you'll see somebody with a camera and you'll see hundreds of thousands. Absolutely right. It's your right to get out and do that. And I have no problem with it. I just get very sad and depressed at the end of the day, David, when they go home. I think the establishment expects you to come out. Look, a million people marched against the Iraq war. We knew it was a pack of lies. We knew that Saddam didn't have weapons of mass destruction. We knew that he might have been a bit of a bastard, but he was, you know, he was our bastard. We used him in the...
He was.
So we knew all that. We knew it was a pack of lies. A million people marched, but they went home. When, at what point, do you hold out any hope that people will eventually just stop complying, stop paying taxes, get together in their local communities, stand up to their local councils and say, no, we're not complying with this. We're not going to pay you, right? You know?
Well, but ultimately that is that is how we get out of this and what you've just said. The difficult, I love to see the marches and it's great to see that. And it's a feel good moment. It doesn't achieve anything. That's the first thing. Just like petitioning Parliament. And you get, you know, these petitions, Richie, 100,000, 200,000 signatures, doesn't achieve anything. These are not ultimately successful strategies to get ourselves out of this one. It has to be, as you've just said, that's the only way out of it. It comes down to resistance. It comes down to one simple word. No.
No.
No. No vaccine. No conformance, no compliance. Maybe because I've always been an awkward sod, it's in my instinct to go against.
Yeah, to be contrary. You know? To be contrary, yeah, as we say.
Oh yeah, ask my wife. I'm a natural born contrarian. but this is now. Others have to be like me. We all have to resist and not comply. So I think that, you know, I mean, ultimately the most revolutionary thing you can do is take off your mask and do not comply. That's what you have to do. There is even, you know, and if we're not prepared to do that, then I'm afraid they will prevail and the dark place will be reached and we will all be fundamentally captive for the rest of our lives. And that's not even going to be the end of it, I don't think. But, no. You know, so we have to resist. Say no. Just say no.
Absolutely right. Final question. GB News. I doubt when you heard about its inception that you held out any hope that it would challenge any of this. By the way, before you answer that, David can be found at BBC... let me get it right. First of all, altnewsmedia.net, isn't it? It's altnewsmedia.net. That's the first one.
Altnewsmedia.net. You find me predominantly there. You find me on Parler, on Gab, on YouTube. And a podcast. Everywhere, yeah.
And the podcast as well. All, if you look for David, all good podcast providers, you'll find David. BBG News, at least thus far, it's been a bit of a letdown, right?
Well, you see, it's Ofcom. Unfortunately, if it's Ofcom controlled, Ofcom essentially does the government's bidding. So how can it possibly constitute effective opposition? It can't. This is the real opposition, which you're the opposition. The people listening to this, you're the opposition. In my own small way, I'm the opposition. We are the opposition. But don't go to GB. The funniest thing I saw on social media was they said they tuned into GB News for the first 3.5 minutes. And within that short period of time, it was already advocating the importance of taking the vaccine.
That's right, yeah.
And said, right, button off. That's it. I'm done. I'm walked away. So it doesn't matter how eloquent Andrew Neil is. It doesn't matter about some of these late night presenters they have. Ultimately, it's Ofcom controlled. And some people might say really all it is controlled opposition. That said, I would say I kind of feel a bit bad because the activists are out there trying to defund it, take away its advertising revenue.
Well, that's shocking. I should have mentioned that. Sorry to not mention that. Yes, whatever we might think about their content and their ability, that's disgraceful. Yep. You've got these idiots on Twitter. They've only got 120,000 followers and they're demanding that advertisers leave GB News because they don't like some of the things they've heard. Yeah, that is very... Thanks for bringing it up, by the way. It's important that.
Yeah, because we believe, Richie, you and I believe in the right to have an opinion and how to express that, without being defunded and having your livelihood taken from you. So for that reason, I kind of do wish them well. I'm really clear in terms of the massive limitations because of the nature of they are an Ofcom-controlled platform, and that's going to mean that ultimately it's going to be pretty weak stuff. But mind you, compared to the BBC or Sky, I suppose it's pretty revolutionary, but we are so much more edgy, aren't we? So this is where people have to come, Richie. If you want to hear proper views, real conversations,
absolutely,
not controlled, then this is where you have to come.
Wherever you get your podcast, look for David Vance, V-A-N-C-E, obviously, altnewsmedia.net. And of course, David is the editor of biasedbbc.org. And, we could have done a whole hour on the BBC, but we won't today. Hey, do me a favour, come back in a few weeks. It shouldn't have been as long since you were back. Come back in a few weeks and we'll have another natter. We'll find something.
It's a pleasure to speak with you, Richie. As you say, the world's been changed, but lots of us have, if anything, been brought together even more strongly. And as I say, we've lasted this far. We're not going anywhere. And Matt Hancock and the gang, you've got plenty of opposition and we're here to make sure that it's encouraged. So thank you for the opportunity to be back with you. It's much appreciated.
Anytime, David. Well said. God bless to you and yours and I look forward to speaking to you again real soon. Bye for now. That was David Vance, of course, altnewsmedia.net, and find David on whoever gives you your podcast, wherever you get your podcast from, you'll find David. Massive amount of tweets on the Matt Hancock statement. I've got people asking me for the audio. I've got lazy people asking me to provide them with the audio because they don't believe the text of my article. Jesus wept. In the article on richieallen.co.uk, I have quoted Hancock word for word. Word for word. And I've played the audio on the radio show. So don't be a lazy arse. If you want to find the audio, go and get it yourself. If you want to find the video, go and get it yourself. I'm a radio show. How you'll go and get it, I don't know. The best way to do that is to go on to the BBC News 24 channel online or go to Sky News on YouTube and scroll back and then record it yourself, you see. I can lead you to water, but I can't make you drink. All righty. Matt Hancock said, I think there is a material difference between the state's responsibility to offer the vaccine to all adults and the duty that we have when somebody has not been offered the vaccine is greater than the duty we have when we have offered a vaccine, but somebody has chosen not to take it up. There is a material difference between those two situations. Andrea Leadsom said, so when my right honourable friend says that he has less of a duty, surely what he means is that he has no duty at all. It is for people to take up the vaccine. Hancock began his answer to her by saying up to a point, and the point is that you should take that as an absolute principle. And he finished up by saying, but in terms of the argument that my right honourable friend is putting, I think she and I concur in the broad thrust of the case being made. It couldn't be clearer. There will be a distinction between those who have yet to receive the vaccine but want to, those who have accepted the vaccine, and on the other side of the fence, those like me and presumably like you and David Vance, who said, no way, Jose. The state's duty of care changes to those of us who say no. And Hancock agreed with Leadsom when she said the state has no duty of care at all. And that's not just about COVID. I explained this in a monologue. That's about something even bigger. That's about the way forward. If you think they're offering you injections now, wait until 2023, 2024, when they've approved all of these new vaccines that are in development, the ones for obesity and everything else. Have the vaccine. Keep yourself under a certain weight. Your BMI, your body mass index. This is all coming. And we got a good shot across the bows today from Matt Hancock. A recent, not new, but a recent single from the legendary Right Said Fred. We're all criminals now. I'm going to play that. We're all criminals now. And in a few moments' time, the multiple award winning, the multiple platinum selling Right Said Fred will be back on the programme to have a chat. They're just wonderful guys. I've never met them. I nearly met them in Manchester about 5 years ago, but I'm in regular touch with the lads, particularly Fred. And he's been very generous in his vocal support of the Richie Allen Show over the years. They came on the programme back in October, I think, or September last year. It was great gas, and I'm delighted that they agreed to come back on today, so we'll get them on. But before we do, We're All Criminals Now by the Freds. We're all criminals. That is the brilliant Right Said Fred, and We're All Criminals on Wednesday's Richie Allen Radio Show. The time is 3 minutes past 6 o'clock, the 16th of June 2021. Without further ado, I'm delighted about this because we had such fun last time we did it. Delighted to welcome back Richard and Fred Fairbrass, the legendary Right Said Fred. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Hey, Richie, thank you very much.
You're brilliant for coming on, because I bet you it's sweltering where you are, right?
It's quite hot, and I'm with Richard's place at the moment, and we've got the sun coming through the kitchen window. It's quite hot.
I bet you Richard gave you a slap, did he, when you didn't agree to go on to, but we agreed to do this before today, before it became 28 degrees, 29 degrees.
No, it's fine, man. It's fine. Yeah.
How are things? I noticed that you've gotten behind a couple of great campaigns, I think, one of them being take those masks and set bloody fire to them, right?
Yes.
Yeah, we have a plan about that.
Yeah, but what's hilarious is that people are saying you'll pollute the atmosphere. So they've had these masks are so toxic, you mustn't burn them. How does that work?
You can't win, can you?
Oh, these people.
You'll have the green party after you.
Oh,
but this has got a bit of traction. When is it supposed to happen, this?
Monday night at 8. Yeah, we're going to experiment beforehand to make sure there's not too much black smoke. Suddenly we get the police coming around. Yeah. So we're going to experiment first and then see what happens and play it by ear.
I'm going to buy a mask just to do it. I mean, I've never worn a mask.
That's what we've done. We've bought.
Oh, yeah, because, of course, you've never... I was going to ask, because you've not worn the masks either, so I've got to buy a mask then and take part.
Yeah, so we had to buy a mask. Yeah. The alternative is to squirt petrol fluid lighter at somebody wearing a mask and set that alight.
Yeah. Excellent idea.
Just in case Greater Manchester Police are listening, I promise you, Richard is only joking.
Someone on Twitter did say, for all mask wearers, you have to remove it before you set fire to it. and I thought that made me laugh. Yeah.
Have you seen any difference in... Look, when we spoke last, we kept it very light. It was lovely, but things were grim. Are you noticing any rebellion? Because I hear from people around London and around Brighton. I hear people from Southend. Friends of mine, they say, Richie, it's good. I'm seeing more people on the bus without a mask. And so are you noticing that?
Yes. Yes, I am. I as you know, I've got a place in Barcelona. That's where my life, my wife is. And my wife and I also have a little business together. So I have to pop back now and again. And I actually got back in the UK yesterday. So I'm in quarantine at the moment. And I thought I'd give Spain a go without a mask because it's mandatory in the street. And you've lived there, Richie. You know what the Spanish police are like.
Yeah. Heavy-handed.
They're heavy. So I thought I'd give it a go. So I took my mask off and I went for a wander down the street. I got some evils from the usual, usual suspects, you know. But a couple of cars drove past and they just couldn't be bothered with the hassle.
Yeah.
And I do. If I'm in Spain, I go into a shop. I will put it on momentarily to go into the shop, but what I tend to do is avoid shops. So because you're going in for confrontation is life's too short for that.
Exactly.
But I just thought it was interesting in Spain. I couldn't have done that earlier this year. I would have been, I would have had too much abuse from the Spanish, and the coppers would have stopped. This time, not only did I not get it, and I didn't, not this time, but when I tried it a couple of days ago, there was no hassle. And also I saw quite a few other people just giving up, taking their masks off and just, I mean, not a lot, to be fair. And also I did it in the airport as well. I just put my lanyard on and I did get confronted by the police and I told them and they were actually all right with it. Maybe I just got lucky with one of the coppers. I don't know.
Before Richard comes in on that, Elizabeth rang our phone in the other evening. Elizabeth's in Madrid. They seem to be a bit more heavy-handed in Madrid. The police are still accosting people outdoors. In Madrid, you're supposed to wear it outdoors, amazing.
Same Barcelona. Yeah.
Madness.
The thing is, the Spanish have been very compliant and... I've said it, you and I, we've talked about this a thousand times. Mass non-compliance is uncontrollable. That's just the reality of it. And if you had a city going, no, we're not doing that, you can't arrest everybody. You can't lock everybody up. And commerce would eventually win and they would back down. But I don't know why people are so compliant. I don't get it.
There's talk over here, isn't there, in the UK from some club owners and Andrew Lloyd Webber particularly has talked about opening his theatres. Yeah. On the 21st.
Do you think he's got the bottle?
Well, he says he's prepared to go to prison. That's what he said. Providing they give him silk sheets and a gold toilet
and a maid.
I think he'll be fine. I mean, I don't know. We'll have to see. On the march on the 26th, there's talk of some sound stages and some DJs.
Yes, there is. That's true.
So, that'd be brilliant. It's good you brought him up, Richard. It's good you brought up Lloyd Webber, because I suppose people will be looking very closely now on Monday to see what does he do. He's got six theatres, I think, if I read that right in the papers. He's got six, yeah.
I mean, I think, for people like him, he's loaded and blah, blah, blah. But, you're running those theatres with no money coming in. The rates and the rents and all that, keeping it heated.
You need a lot of money.
Oh, my Lord. The amount of money that's been hemorrhaging from those business. Same with nightclub owners and all that, So I think the tipping point is coming. And I agree with you. I think you are seeing less compliance now. And very often what I've found is that if somebody's wearing a mask and you say, I'm sorry, can you take the mask? I can't understand what you're saying. They take it off straight away and you suddenly realize they're fine with not using a mask and they actually think it's all pretty silly as well. So there is a danger that you can sort of you damn people automatically just because they're wearing a mask. They might actually agree with you, but they just are too nervous to take it off.
Yeah, you two are very kind and selfless. I know you are because I know you help out at a care home. I want to talk about that in a few minutes, but the reason I'm mentioning your kindness and selflessness is because you mentioned everybody else, but you didn't mention yourselves. Now, I'm not kissing your arses when I say that you are a massively successful act. We know you are, and you're always in demand. It must be killing the two of you. I asked you this back in September. It must be killing. I mean, you're naturally gifted performers. You love the stage. You're loved. I mean, it must be driving you up the wall now.
It's kind of weird. Yeah, it's the thing is, Richie, it's actually a bit weird because you lose, to some extent, you lose track of who you are in a funny kind of
what you did.
And what you did.
Is that right?
Suddenly the life, I mean, the life that we've had since the 70s, where we started as kids, and right the way through the 80s and the 90s, it's all been performance. It's all been driven by going on stage and doing things. And then suddenly overnight, that was gone. And now we've been, you know, we're talking to our promoter. The reality of doing shows with quarantine is impossible.
It is, yeah.
It's absolutely impossible. You just it's not financially viable. Mm. And so our position is one of confusion. It's good to look on the positive side if you can, but truthfully, unless they drop this quarantine thing and they take the chains off, I can't see, from our point of view, I can't see gigs happening, unless of course you're like the Foo Fighters who are
happy to discriminate
deeply into a chemical apartheid and do a vaccine only gig in New York.
I nearly got sick because I do love The Boss. I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for Bruce Springsteen. And one or two others, Bob Seger being another one. I just wouldn't. It was so very important to me as a kid going through a very bad time, listening to these songs. I know Bruce fessed up, didn't he? He fessed up last year when he was in Broadway and he said, I'm a bit of a hypocrite, he says. I write all these songs about working class people and I've never been a working class bloke in my life. I've always been in bands. But Bruce is doing it. He's going back to Broadway and if you're not vaxxed, you're not getting in. I don't know what to do about that. A part of me doesn't want to play his records again.
No. I'm the same with someone. I'm the same. I feel that about Elton John. I big fan of early Elton John.
Yeah.
I wouldn't play him now because I just think, you know, just that. Well, it's medical discrimination. And if someone said, oh yeah, we're doing some shows, but we're not letting fat people in
or HIV,
we wouldn't put up with it.
Or you know, how it was before, Richie, you know, or Irish or Jews. I mean, the list is endless. And if you suddenly put that, if you advertise that gig with those discriminations, that segregation, people would. Well, you get arrested, wouldn't you?
The thing I think that's really, really depressing about this with people like Bruce Springsteen and stuff is they don't understand the logic of what they're saying. I understand the idea that if you happen to believe that vaccinated people are safer, I get that. I do understand that if you believe that, that's absolutely fine. But you have to understand what you become when you say, I will only perform for vaccinated people. You have to understand what that is. And in Germany, when people were conflating the current situation with the anti-Semitism before the Second World War and during the Second World War, there are lots of Jewish people and Holocaust survivors who got very, very angry about that. In a way, I can see why, because it's a very different and a much more odious situation back then than it currently is. But the seed is the same. That's the point. It's not necessarily that. The whole thing is the same, but the germ of it
is the mindset is there,
which is that I will only talk to you, I will only entertain you, I will only be your friend if you do what I say, and that is potentially an extremely dangerous position to have, and it's also very depressing when artists are like that. I mean, we've had Eric Clapton doing the rounds with based on his experience with the vaccine, and he came across as a genuinely
really nice guy
and very, very honest about his peripheral neuropathy and everything else. And
Richard, remind us, because a lot of our listeners now won't have seen the interview with Eric Clapton. Remind us of what that was basically about.
Okay, very quickly, he's got health issues, which he's been very open about. But his GP, NHS GP, as I understand it, and if any of these quotes are wrong, have to forgive me, but basically said, have the jab. He had the first jab. He was very, very ill. He was advised again because of his health issues, you need to set the second jab. His hands didn't work, as I understand it, for three weeks. Now, if you're one of the world's most famous guitar players, That is incredibly
terrifying.
It's just distressing. He's also just what he's realized is that he openly says, you know, the phone rarely rings now since I've spoken out about this. People don't want to talk to me. And I think even people he's probably worked with for years, apart from, I think Van Morrison has been a good mate,
yeah, yeah.
As I understand it. But if you go, there's a company called Oracle Films, and they made the documentary. I'm not just saying this because we're on Telegram, but on Right Said Fred Telegram page, we've got that clunk. We've got that video.
Oh yeah, go there. Absolutely.
Sure, and you're on Telegram, Richie, aren't you?
I am, but I don't know how to use it. You can ask if you want. I haven't a clue how to use it. Honestly, I'm useless. It doesn't look like Twitter, so I immediately have a brain freeze. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. I will share our link of the interview on your Twitter page.
Yes.
Legend, and I'll retweet it, which you've got.
I will do that. I will set that up now while we're chatting from my phone.
I am but a serf compared to the royalty of the 2EE. Will you give over? You've got millions of fans all over the world. So that was my great mate Jean Anne Crowley, the actress. Jean Anne saw the Eric video. She said it was very poignant, the interview. And he must have been terrified. I want to talk about, we'll stay with the vaccine thing, because obviously one of the big stories today is that they're going to mandate it for care home workers. Now, our listeners might remember last time we chatted, Richard and Fred have helped out at a care home. It's a lovely thing to do. And I know you do it because you love doing it, and you love people. You love people first and foremost, but you love older people, and you love your mum, of course. Tell us, how do you feel about that? You know how I feel, but I think it's dreadful. What do you think of it, 2EE?
Well, what I think is, for me, what strikes me as odd is that the government are not saying you have a choice. You can either wear PPE or you can have a jab. Now, when they say you must have a jab, are we to assume that PPE never worked in the first place? That's my point.
Great point.
I just think care workers and people in the NHS should be given a choice. Now, I do understand that the protection of the elderly in a care home and the protection of the vulnerable within a hospital is absolutely key, and that I understand the thinking behind mandatory vaccinations. I understand it. But you hear all sorts of stories about vaccinations, and it doesn't prevent transmission. There's a thing today that the government are now recommending that the screens be taken down.
I saw that.
Did you see this? I mean, it's unbelievable.
Hang on. This is great. I haven't heard this. What is it?
Okay, well, now that the government have just realized or thought, I don't know what they are. Are they thinking? I don't know.
Who knows?
But they're saying now that the screens that you see in shops separating you between you and the person behind the desk need to come down, because the virus is carried on airflow, and these things for some reason don't work. I don't know how they work. So my question about this was, fine, there's a hairdresser around the corner. They've spent between $5,000 and $10,000 on some pretty decent perspex, protective things.
All
chromed and edged.
What's the word I'm looking for? Branded.
Branded, yeah. Really nice. And we just got a car from Audi, and the same there. It's all branded stuff. I look forward to the government handing out checks to all these businesses who have been misled to putting this stuff in, spending their hard-earned money, then being shut down for God knows how long. The whole thing, I can't tell you, but it's a comedy of errors. Yes. You now have a situation where it's jab, no fly. Oh, some airlines are so nervous about you getting a blood clot on the flight. If you had a jab, they're advising you not to fly.
Yeah.
You can't make it up.
Now, hang on, because I heard that as well, and I said that as well. But right. I've also read something, not today, maybe yesterday, that this is a genuine story. So you're reporting a genuine story. I think Sky News Australia ran with this, but I think they've had to do a bit of a backtracking on it. Nobody's identified a specific airline that's saying we're worried that you might get thrombosis if you've had the jab. So I don't know if that's true or not, but it makes sense. I mean, you could see something crazy like that happening, couldn't you?
Well, it was interesting. We read an article. Richard read an article today, which we now can't find. But it's a thing called succession planning. And apparently, if you're in very high-end big business, they do this thing. It's a bit like futures, but for trading futures, but with humans. So you pick out the people who are going to be your winners and losers in 5 years and 10 years' time. They've now mandated in this company, this lady, works for, and she's a succession planner, you have now mandated that that anyone who's been vaccinated is off the list because their life expectancy is 5 years.
Yes, so basically, if in 3 to 5, between 3 and 5 years, that's the period when they think they might have to replace you.
Yeah,
the understanding is that you by that time you'll be too poorly or whatever to work. I think, you know,
even the thought is.
Today there's a quote, I think, because Cummings has been leaking some tweet, some
WhatsApp, WhatsApp screen grabs,
so vile to each other. It's so great, you know. Cummings has released these WhatsApp things from Boris Johnson, who is supposedly described Hancock as fucking useless. I don't know whether that's true,
He definitely did more than once. More than once, that's right. And what will come of that is anybody's guess. I know Number 10 later this afternoon put out a statement saying that Hancock still had the full support of Boris Johnson. But that's the old when the manager's lost 5 games in a row at Brentford and the chairman says, no, he's got my total support. And then he's fired on Monday. So he could be.
Do you remember when Thatcher said, who was it? She was talking about someone and he said his position is unassailable.
Was it Lawson?
Yeah, and he was gone a week later.
He's gone a week later. That's right, yeah. Let me remind not that our listeners need to be reminded. Follow Richard and Fred, Right Said Fred, on Twitter. It's at the Freds. Great to catch up with them again. Fair play to them for sitting here in the sweltering heat and chatting with you and me this hour. They've won everything there is to win, the lads. Multiple platinum selling artists, they've won BMI awards, Century of Songbook, they're in there, they've done it all, and you've always had a very young audience. So what I wanted to ask you was, you mentioned earlier on that Eric Clapton, the legend himself, got a little bit of blowback because of his stance. What about you two? What sort of, you know, things have you been hearing from industry people? Have you had any kind of tut-tut there, Richard and Fred? Have you had any of that in the last 6 months, 12 months?
We've had a lot from promoters. We've had shows pulled. We've had loads of lies by the Guardian.
The Guardian weren't nice. They were not nice at all.
Surprising,
I was staggered. I thought they were nice, cuddly left-wing types. Yeah, exactly. They were horrible to us.
Yeah, the Guardian said some nonsense. We've got, if you put in, right, so Fred, all you see is COVID deniers, anti-vaxxers. We've never
Illuminati.
We're now Illuminati, apparently.
But you know, you laughing at that. You've got an amazing sense of humour and you make me laugh. I'm laughing listening to you. But there's something deadly serious about this as well. We're in a post-truth world now where people can... what is it? It's not gaslighting. It's playing the man and not the ball. Inventing stuff about people rather than taking them on what they actually said. But of course, they can't take you on the things that you've actually said because those are taboo subjects, as you referred to in the song. We're all criminals. There are things you can't say now, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's I think one of the most depressing things for us, or certainly for me, has been the realization that the music industry is full of compliance.
It is, yeah.
That I never used to think that was the case. I always really thought that musicians were of a mind, just by nature of what they are, to be cynical and to be truculent and to be independent thinkers. It is quite distressing for me and depressing and everything else when we do these marches that we are actually the most famous people there.
Bit of a sad indictment.
I have to tell you that, you know, a half of me is pleased by that.
Absolutely right.
It would be depressed if Paul McCartney turned up and nobody was talking to me. I would find that quite irritating.
I think Sir Paul has probably had the double jab.
I think he probably has.
I think he definitely has.
I think... all I'm saying, we have never said, do not have the jab.
It's personal choice.
Yes, it's a personal choice. All we are saying is...
give peace a chance.
Think for yourself. Don't do it because Hancock says it. Don't do it because Johnson says it. Don't do it because Fauci says it. Just think for yourself. Yeah. Because you have all the information now on socials, it's quite easy to get the lowdown on the odds on this. So, you know... I find it inexcusable when people just follow the herd without thinking for themselves. I have no patience with people like that at all. It's indefensible.
Did you hear? Sorry, Fred. Go ahead, and then I'll ask you a question. Sorry for interrupting. Okay, go ahead.
There's a friend of ours who runs a local antique shop, and he's a lovely man. And he decided to have the double jab. He was so ill, he lost a whole week's work. And is now very, very sorry. Had one jab. Sorry, one jab. And now he's absolutely can't afford to take the second jab because he can't lose another week.
Well, also he doesn't want it.
No, and he doesn't want to. But when we were talking to him, we said, "Which one did you have?" He didn't know. And I said, "Well, didn't they talk to you when you had it?" He said, "No, I wasn't giving any information."
That drives me mad now.
Yeah.
God love him now. Look, I'm sure he's a lovely bloke, but to not even know what it actually is, to even not even know the name of it.
I know.
The thing is, Richie, is people automatically trust. They trust the government, and they trust people in white coats. And I remember seeing a Dom Jolly. I know Dom Jolly's a bit of a headache in his own way.
Just a tad.
But he did one thing that was quite funny, and he just put on a hazmat jacket, which is just a waistcoat almost.
You mean the high vis?
Yeah, sorry, not hazmat. High vis. And he stood in London. And he's standing on the pavement and he was saying to people as they walk towards him, "Can you please walk close to the wall? Stick very, very close to the wall." Nobody questioned him.
They did it.
Yeah, nobody questioned him. Nobody said why. Nobody, because he had the jacket on, the assumption was he knew what he was talking about. And they all did it. They all walked along the pavement with creeping along the wall.
That reminds me of when Manchester Arena opened up after the bomb 3 years ago. The first gig was Neil Diamond, so I took my Mrs. Caroline and a friend of ours, Phil, down to watch it at Manchester Arena. And as we're walking in, there's all these brutish blokes, all in high vis jackets, screaming at old dears with handbags, "Get over to the right, get over to the right!" And they all were, they're all shuffling over until we said to them, "I said you lot won a war. You won a war, you lot." And a couple of them perked up and they said, "Yeah, we did win an effing war." And they told the guys to piss off. But their initial instinct, like Richard said, was just to jump to the corner, to all file like sheep. It's crazy, well, isn't it?
We've been touring a long time, and we were discussing, when we play Sexy, how shall we introduce it? So Richard came up with this idea that the Lancet had released a paper and it's been scientifically proven it's the greatest pop song ever, right? So, true, absolutely, 100% true.
So
we started doing some shows and he started introducing it like this. We had our manager, our record company, and journalists calling us up and saying, we've got to see this Lancet interview. This is amazing. I'm serious.
You're kidding me, Fred.
No. If you say it, people go, "Oh, wow." Yeah,
it must be true.
People act, even our manager... We shouldn't say even. But it was amazing. The minute it was said down a microphone, people just bought it hook, line, and sinker. It was funny and scary all at once.
People are funny. You won't have heard this. It's a clip that I've been playing to death to make my listeners laugh, and they laugh no matter how many times I play it. It's a guy called Matthew who was on BBC Radio 5 Live with Nicky Campbell about 4 weeks ago, and Matthew is really pissed off with anti-vaxxers, and he said some things that I might live to be 1,000 and do another 5 million radio shows. I will never get a laugh like Campbell got out of this guy, and this is quite astonishing. I don't know if you should be able to hear this.
I had the vaccine. It put me in hospital for a day, but I haven't moaned. I've had the second one and it put me in hospital for another day.
You had the vaccine. And it gets worse then, right? So he had the vaccine, put him in hospital, had it again, in hospital again. And then, why should we give beds to the unvaccinated? This is what he says.
Why on earth should somebody who has refused to have it take a bed that I might need if I have a bad reaction to it?
Fantastic. That is Little Britain. That is comedy gold, isn't it? And you know, Matthew is genuine. He's not an actor. So he genuinely believes this, you know?
Yeah.
So we need to keep hospital beds free
for the people who fall ill.
So the people who do take the vaccine, when they're ill, they need they need a bed.
Yes. Yeah.
This all makes sense.
Yeah, I know. As I said earlier, it's just such theatre. I mean, the most also to me, when I was walking out on the street the other day and I saw loads of people wearing masks, and this was after the G7 nonsense, when it was clear that it's theatre. It's clear that they do it when they know the camera's on them. They play the game, and when they think the camera's off them, they just behave like normal people. it was so obvious, and yet it doesn't somehow filter through. It just doesn't seem to. You see Hancock walking into number 10 with a mask, and the minute he's through the door, he tears it off.
Chucks it off. Well, now, Jean Ann mentions to me that actors, actresses are the same. Very few of them are raising their heads and, you know, it's like yourselves having the courage to challenge it. You might not have heard it. In the Commons today, Matt Hancock and Andrea Leadsom had a conversation that went pretty much like that. We have a duty of care to those who have had the vaccine, and we have a different duty of care to those who have refused it. So this is pretty nakedly just admitting that, right, okay, we're going to discriminate very heavily against those who haven't had the vax. That's, I mean, Jesus, lads, tyranny, right?
Yeah, and also I want a rebate.
Yeah, well, I want a tax rebate. Yeah, thank you very much. No, absolutely. It is the really depressing thing about this is right from the beginning, we've had a prime minister who is an empty vessel. You can fill him up with anything that you want to put in there, and he's obsessed with polling. He seems to have no convictions of his own. So right from the beginning, when you see people out on the street wearing a mask that's unnecessary, I don't blame them, because they've not been told by people who should know. So if Boris Johnson had come out right at the beginning and talked about the immune system, talked about how to keep yourself healthy, how to reduce your drinking if possible, reduce your smoking, reduce your weight, blah, de, blah, de, blah, use this as a way of encouraging people to look after themselves better so as to improve their chances of survival should they contract COVID-19, I would have had a tremendous amount of respect for that, because it would have made sense. But no, that's not what they did. Right from the beginning, it was all about finger wagging, fines and signs. That's what it was. And it is absolutely inappropriate. And it's infantilized the entire country.
It has,
sadly. He is the most disastrous prime minister we've had since Eden.
So I'm just going back, Richard. Have you, what's your experience being a journalist on and doing your show with your position on the pandemic? I know your position was probably set in stone before the pandemic, but have you had family members or friends distance themselves or not?
Not so much distance, because my family is in Ireland and I'm obviously in Salford. I do get the occasional message from people I worked with in radio back home who I haven't worked with now for a long, long time. And even one or two people I worked with in Spain. And they assume that I've gone crazy. One or two, they assume that I'm very clever and that I'm trying to monetize, you know, that I see that there's a market for anti-vaxxers, and I'm trying to somehow exploit that. And I say to them, well, that's, you know, lousy. Listen back to the shows that I've been doing since the, you know, 2009, 2010, going way back. Yeah. So I don't get, and you know, it's a great question, Fred. It was my next question to yourselves. You know, you'll have had lifelong friends in the industry. You'll have had lifelong friends before the industry. You'll have had extended family. I was going to ask you the very same question.
We've had people not so much distance themselves, that there's just zero support.
Yes.
Loads of musicians online,
nothing.
Particularly Facebook, absolutely nothing. There's one session guitar player who's been I better not name him because he put it, you know, it's not fair.
I don't want you to.
No, but he's actually a great blues guitar player, and he's been great. But most of our other friends, I would use the word loosely, but people we know through the music industry have distanced us by a country mile. And in a way, to be honest with you, we knew that we expected it to happen. So we're not particularly perturbed. We don't have a great deal of friends in the music industry because I don't particularly like a lot of the people in the music industry. Our friends tend to be other parts of entertainment or just regular, you know, they run restaurants or shops or whatever, you know.
It has been a wake-up call in terms of people that you thought you knew, you don't know.
That's true.
Thought you understood them. You thought, and for me personally, I grew up, we both grew up in a pretty small C conservative town. I think the conservative majority there was about 4.5 million. I'm not quite sure. People go around at night shooting Labour voters. I'm not quite sure.
It was quite balanced.
But that was our history. But I now realise that the truth lies somewhere in the middle. What we have in this, I think there are a lot of Tory voters out there who are absolutely incensed by the direction of the current government. Johnson must be incredibly happy that he's got Starmer in the opposition.
Oh, he's woeful.
And at a time like this, when we have a perfect storm, and people need to feel, they need to feel hopeful. You can't, there's no point in trying to pull the wool over their eyes about what's going on, but they need to feel hopeful. You have to sell a positive message. There's a lady, I'm reading Laura Dodsworth's book at the moment.
You're reading the book, are you? No, I've not read it yet, and I'm going to get Laura on the programme. Tell us.
It's very good. Laura is fantastic. She's a lovely lady.
Yeah, it's a really good book. And what's good about it, I didn't want to get into the science of the whole thing, because the science of it is like the Bible. You can pretty much draw any story, any conclusion you want from the science.
Right.
For me, that wasn't the way to go, and I'm not a scientist, so I'm not qualified to judge. What I can judge, I think, is what the book is about, which is the way fear and paranoia has been manufactured and exacerbated by this government. And the whole book, and I recommend it to anybody, Laura Dodsworth, State of Fear, is a good study on how the government has managed to frighten people out of their wits. Now, there's one chapter in the book, I can't remember the lady's name, and what she says is quite simple. She says, why didn't the BBC, why didn't Sky News, why didn't the mainstream media publish recovery rates? Why didn't they do that? She said, every morning I would turn on the news and it was just death, death, death,
that's
death.
Right,
I wanted
right.
to know, was anybody recovering? What were the recovery rates? And she said, in the end, I think she was about 60, this lady. And in the end, she said, I just turned the news off because I knew that I was only getting one side of the story. That, for me, has been the problem right from the very beginning. There's been absolutely no balance. And the essential realities of living in a liberal democracy, which are the right to privacy, the right to bodily integrity, the right to gather, and the right to protest and dissent, have never been spoken of in a defensive way and supportive way from the House of Commons. It's a disgrace.
Now, tell me this, the two of you, I want to get both your reaction, opinion on this. I know, of course, a lot of our listeners loved you because when the first big protest happened, you were there and you talked about it. And of course, you got hammered for it, but it was brilliant you were there. So you go to the protest. And I've got to say this again, because some listeners don't listen to me. They think that I criticise the protests. I don't. What I say is, it's brilliant. Why not? Get out there, meet people. And I'm sure it's very reinvigorating. But like I was chatting with my previous guest, they don't ultimately move the state away from the state's position. Is there a point, Richard and Fred, I suppose you come in first, that we have to engage in some fairly good localised civil disobedience?
I think mass compliance is the ideal. We've already got mass compliance. Sorry. Mass non-compliance would be the ideal sort of response. In terms of the protest, the reason we go is we're not naive. We don't think suddenly Parliament are going to go, oh wow, look at those 2 million people on the street, or 1 million, but whatever, and let's change policy. But what it does do, it changes people. It engages people. It changes people on the street. And if that wasn't the case, we wouldn't have gone from 5,000 people last July, I think it was, to 1 million last month. And so there is that momentum. And I think it's, as you say, it's invigorating. It's like-minded people. Most people we speak to have no.
It's their first one.
Yeah. Well, yes. First of all, quite often it's their first one. A lot of people, the guy that fixes my guitars, the most mild-mannered man you would ever meet in your life, and he sent me a text after the extension on June 14th. I can't repeat any of it. He's so angry, and his expletives were so. I'm not sure I understood most of them. I think he's going to have a breakdown. He's
Is
so
he coming on the 26th.
No, I'm not sure he will.
Okay,
I'm not just one of those people. He's just so angry. His life is being ruined, and I think there's a lot of people out there who feel that. Whether it's personally, I think there will be disobedience. I think Macron getting slapped was a start of something.
Very funny, apart from
It's a pity the guy didn't know how to land a punch.
You should have had John Prescott there.
Yes.
Hey, on saying that, you've brought up a very good point. I gave some of my listeners a bit of stick yesterday because they were delighted that the political editor of Newsnight, Nick Watt, was harangued. Now, the video looked nasty. I mean, some guys were bumping him and screaming at him. And I just posed the question. Look, I'm no saint. I've got a past. I certainly have a past. I'm no saint. But what happened to us? Why have we, some of us, I mean, these are a proper minority now in the protest movement. But why couldn't they have just walked alongside him and said, Nick, can you do us a favour? Can you start asking some bloody questions, can you? Because we're dying out here. Why did they jump all over him and scream in his face and all that? And then some people say then it was staged. You see, so you know, I mean, I'm not saying I believe it was staged.
No, it wasn't staged.
But it was nasty, and there's no need for that nonsense.
Well, the only thing I'd say, I agree. I'm not advocating violence or that sort of approach to people. But I think what's happening, I can tell you, certainly in the music industry, there's a couple, I won't mention their names. There's a friend of mine, he's now getting divorced. He's lost his house. And if he's not careful, he's going to literally end up in some sort of government housing facility. And 2 years ago, he was driving some of the biggest pop stars in the world around and having a very nice life, and everything was fantastic. And now he's on medication, he's angry, he can't see his kids, he's upset. What I think you have to understand, not you, but people, is every action has a reaction. And if you ruin someone's life to that point, to that extent, don't be surprised if they come up and they want to hurt you.
Yeah.
You know, that's human nature. And Rich and I are very lucky. We will probably survive this. We've got royalties and we've been half sensible with some of our money.
Save money on hairdressers.
Yeah. I don't use hookers now, so it's all good, man.
It's all good. Yeah,
no, I'm no longer a cokehead. That saves me a fortune. we will probably survive this. Loads and loads of friends of ours aren't and won't. And on the one hand, I agree with you, Richie. The mob thing is a dark path to go down. The only thing we have to understand is people have had their lives ruined.
Yes, and I wouldn't lock up the guys, and I do understand them. I mean, I did my little rant on it last night. I did make the point. I understand their anger because journalism is dead. It's dead.
It is.
And these guys, many of them are like your friend, and God love your friend. I hope he'll be okay. I really do. And we all know people like that. So they see Nick Watt coming along, red rag to a bull. This guy is not doing his job. I totally understand it. I mean, I heard they all took to the airwaves yesterday to virtue signal. You should have heard James O'Brien on LBC. It was disgraceful. Talking about an attack on journalism. The irony, of course, is there is no journalism.
Just say, James O'Brien could make an awful lot more money if he's just sold his voice to sanatoriums throughout the world.
Yes,
because his voice is so somnambulant.
Yeah, yeah.
So boring.
It's dreadful. Yeah.
He is such an ass.
There's him, Jeremy Vine, Piers Morgan. Who's that other cretin? Dan Hodges. I mean, these people that are just, you know, maybe they're paid opposition. I have no idea. I don't know what's going on.
I watched a very, very short clip today of Andrew Neil on GB News. And it was one of the items he was covering was the Nick Watts Newsnight guy being chased through the streets. And the blurb from Andrew Neil began by saying Nick Watts was attacked by a mob. And the minute I heard that word, I knew exactly what the general slant of that item was going to be. That the general slant of that item was going to be these people are morons, they're a mob. And this guy is great.
Richard, this is brilliant because you're making a point that maybe some of the listeners won't actually get. I'm not saying they're stupid. Richard is making a point here. GB News is not trying to track down any of the lads who surrounded Nick Watt to give them a fair go, is he? He's not tracking down the gentleman with the beard to say to him, like a real journalist, mate, can you explain why you did that? Because they're terrified of the answer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, also, they are.
Also,
yeah.
I tweeted about this, and I just said, you know, Andrew Neil should perhaps just spend a second thinking that the people that surrounded Nick Watts were TV license payers.
Yeah.
Maybe they were. You know, and I'm really sorry to say this. It makes me sound horrible. I know. I don't care. I truly don't care what happened to Nick Watts that day. I truly don't care because the BBC News has been betraying its fundamental charter right the way through Brexit and now right the way through COVID-19.
Mm.
That's the truth of it. You only have to watch BBC News to know that you're getting one story. And we have a friend who's been sitting on the fence for a long, long time. And when the march happened a few weeks ago and there was almost a million people on the streets, he said he tried to find evidence of coverage within the BBC on online and in the papers, whatever. I personally didn't look, I admit, but he said he couldn't find anything. Now, if that, with all due respect, if that was a BLM march with a million people on the street, do you think the BBC would not cover it?
Mm.
If that was an Extinction Rebellion demonstration on the street of London with a million people,
they did cover it at G7.
You have to call it like it is.
It's outrageous, isn't it, Richard? That and Fred, it's outrageous that they never mentioned, even in passing, the staggering numbers of people that travelled to London.
Yeah. Going back to the thing, Richard, where you're talking about what, you know, in a way you were asking, what does this do anything? One of the things that was really interesting on the march was, not the last march, it was the march before. I got talking to a lady from Southampton, and she was probably about 60, I would guess. And for her, going on the march was extremely, it was a really positive influence in her life, because what she told me was that she was the only person in her street and in her town and in her work, wherever it was, who thought like she did. So she felt really cut off and alone when she was down there. So by coming up to London and meeting a whole load of like-minded people,
that's wonderful in
some way. And I think that in itself is an important thing.
No, it is. I'll never in my life criticise it, ever. I just said before, there needs to be something come out of it. I'm going to give you two massive swelled heads, by the way. You're not going to believe this. Wait till I tell you. This is the truth. I never, ever lie. This is the truth. We've got Richard and Fred Fairbrass on from the proper legendary Right Said Fred. For the first time ever, I've been doing this for 7 years. We've crashed a couple of times because of the volume of traffic. Now, let me explain that. I normally have, of an evening, somewhere between 130 to 155,000 listeners at any given time listening in, right? That's great. I'll get a swelled head. It's lovely. My streaming company in America, in California, they're very good. And sometimes it goes over that and they cope with it. But we've had so many, it's gone down a couple of times. We've had well in excess of 200, 220,000 listeners. Wow. So it's caused some problems for some people. So I'm apologising. One or two people sending me messages saying that they lost us for a bit. That's because we've got proper celebrities. We never have proper celebrities on this programme, ever. But we have today. This is the reason.
I listen to your show. Don't start that nonsense.
But I don't. I mean, I have people on, doctors and academics, but we never have proper celebrities on, do we? So that's why it's happened. So it's the first time ever. So it's a milestone for the show. So there you are.
The thing is, Richard, all we've said right from the beginning is, and if I was a politician, the whole thing in my life would be to encourage British people to think for themselves. That's it. I'm not asking them to do what I say. I'm not asking them to do this or do that. Just think for yourselves and educate yourself and be informed. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, what?
You know, it's not. But weirdly, in the world that we live in right now, that in itself has become an inflammatory thing to say.
I was talking to that guy James last night. Well, we're talking about
James.
Yeah, and we had some drinks with some very nice friends, and I was talking to this one guy, and he's sort of still is 1 foot in the pro-vax, which is fine. I'm not saying that he can't be pro-vax. So I mentioned a couple of things. I said, well, what was your thought about, you know, with the PCR test and Carrie Mullis? He'd never heard of Carrie Mullis, ever. So I said, well, you do know he invented the PCR test, and he's got a few things to say about it. And he's said it on camera. And he had some things to say about Fauci, and he said that on camera. And I'm thinking, well, it's okay. It's all right having your opinion, but at least have it from a considered opinion, which isn't, because he's reacting via the mainstream media. He hadn't heard of Dr. Mike Geeden, Sunita Gupta, Carl Hennigan, John Ioannidis in Stanford. I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah.
He hadn't heard any of these people. And I think, fine, have your opinion, but at least try and get a balance and listen to other people.
Yeah. You need to give classes. Just before Richard comes back in, Fred, you need to give classes in how to achieve what you achieved, because the rest of us have spent years trying to get our friends to look at genuine videos of genuine people. And our friends just go, oh, yeah, you got that off Facebook, did you? You got that off of Twitter.
Don't start me on that.
So how do you do it?
Oh, man, well, it involves a chokehold. Yeah, brilliant. And some Rohypnol, and I drag them down and make them watch it. You know, I don't know, Richie. And to be honest with you, I don't know if they do watch it. In fact, there was one lady, I will mention her name, because she was lovely. Her name's Chell Turner. She's on my Facebook feed. And she sent me a gorgeous message about 6 months ago. She said, I've been following you for a year and I've kept my mouth shut. She said, I have to tell you, I've now turned. I think you're right and I think we're being lied to. I was a massive advocate of the lockdowns and be cautious and all this sort of stuff. And she said, I've been turned. She said, not me, but the stuff I post. I'm not pretending to be some sort of sage. Well,
watch out.
Actually, I could be part of sage. I'm about as qualified as some of them. It was lovely. It was a lovely message. I'm sure you get the same, Richie. You get the usual slaggings as we all do, and then suddenly you'll get this one really nice message, and you think, well, that's lovely.
It's usually about the guests, really. When I get an email from somebody who's kind of had kind of mainstream approach to things or taking the BBC line, the compliment generally tends to be, oh, somebody insisted that I listen to a guest, a doctor, and now I'm thinking twice, and that is wonderful, because ultimately that's what any radio show or TV show should be, independent or mainstream. It should be there to provide both sides of an argument. Now, I do try to provide both sides. I've invited them all on, all of them.
I know.
Even the scientists who say we should all lock down. We've got about 2 minutes left on this. I can't believe you stayed with me for the whole hour. I'm so glad you did. I know Richard wanted to come back in there. We interrupted Richard there. You were going to say something, Richard.
He's very dull, Richard.
He's not dull. He's brilliant. Loving the threads. The reaction on Twitter is amazing, by the way, to this.
I truly believe that this country would be a lot better off if from the centre, from Westminster and the House of Lords, people were encouraged every day to be positive, to think for themselves, and to value things like bodily integrity, liberty, privacy, and all that stuff. I think these are absolutely essential things you have to defend and support all the time. Otherwise, one of these days there'll be a knock at your door and you'll wonder what has gone on. And the world has moved on and it's too late for you to do anything. So I feel really strongly about that. I think we're being let down so massively politically by the present government. And it's simply a lack of leadership. It's a lack of passion, a lack of clarity, an obsession with polling as opposed to digging deep into your inner self and discovering your own sense of value, your own sense of purpose, all the time you're following the polls, you end up where we are right now. It changes from day to day. We are having to talk to our promoter now and explain to him that even gigs that he thinks might happen probably won't.
No.
And the reason for that is because there's no clarity.
And the fallout from that is road crew is, your guitar tech, Fred, obviously. Yep. You've got all of that, all of these men and women who depend on you, and you'd love to be out there working with them, and it's not happening. It's
No, you can't. Cute. And also what the promoters, we had two offers come in today from Germany and Belgium. We had to go back and say, they're both on the amber list. They had never heard of the amber list. So I said, the amber list, it means that everyone coming back will have to quarantine for 10 days with a test on second day and eighth day. That test per person is in the region of £150 to £190. You won't be able to work for those 10 days unless we do a test to release. That's another £175 per person on the fifth day. And they just came back with disbelief. They'd never heard of any of this.
No.
Didn't know.
No.
Do me a favour, the two of you, will you? I said this to you back in September and it didn't happen for months. When you're not doing anything and it's not warm outside and you're not having a drink with somebody and you fancy a rant, maybe late summer, maybe early autumn, come back on because it's a tonic. You have no idea it's a tonic.
We'll come back on tomorrow, shall we?
We've
got nothing going on.
Nothing going on, yeah. You can play, we can do a gig, yeah. Yeah, if it was telly. But no, it has been a tonic and you will see some of the tweets later,
That would be lovely, Richie. We'd love to do that.
Your gents for coming on. Follow the Fred's, the website. I don't have to put links. I'm not going to put links. You know who they are, right, said Fred. At the Fred's on Twitter, give him a follow. And when I say this, I mean it. Thank you for using your very, significant voices to put questions to people and to put the other side of it. It's one thing me doing it, but guys like you who've been singing and performing to massive venues, success after success for years and years, when you do it, it definitely makes a difference. So thanks, lads.
Cheers, Richard. No, thanks for having us. We appreciate your support.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's been an honour. Thanks so much, lads. That was Richard and Fred, the legendary Right Said Fred. Get on. They're on Telegram, the lads, they've already said that. And they're on Twitter, of course, at the Freds. Love them. And thanks to them for coming on again today. Not long to go. I won't get stuck into the tweets. There were many, 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 many tweets. I just want to address this thing, not because I'm in any way thin-skinned. I'm not thin-skinned. But I'm taking a little bit of flack now from commercial media over my Matt Hancock story. Now, the headline I put on the Matt Hancock story on my website is a little bit cheeky, but it is supported by the text of the article, and it is supported by what the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, did say. He clearly said that he concurs with the broad thrust of the case made by Andrea Leadsom, that he has no duty at all to those who refuse the vaccine. No duty. He says it clearly. Right? He does say that. Now, my headline reads, Hancock, we have no duty of care at all to vaccine refuseniks. Yeah, he doesn't say those words in sequence. That's a headline. But he does say those words. He basically says that very thing. Right? You'll never get fake news from me, ever. Ever. I've been a journalist since the late 1990s. I take great pride in the fact that I will never knowingly say something that's untrue. I will never say something that I know to be untrue. I'll never do that. I accuse others of being clickbait merchants. I will never be a clickbait merchant. Matt Hancock clearly stated today, before the interjection of Andrea Leadsom, clearly, the duty we have when somebody has not been offered the vaccine is greater than the duty we have when somebody who has been offered it has turned it down. In other words, we have a duty of care to people who've taken the vax and to those who haven't yet gotten it. Our duty of care is different to those who have refused it. Andrea Leadsom said, hey, what you really mean is you've no duty at all. And he said he concurs. So that's the truth. It isn't fake news. You can argue about the headline, but I think the headline stands up. So the headline remains. All right. I'll always answer my critics. Always. But I've nothing to hide. Hancock clearly said it. If you haven't had the jab, things are going to be different for you in the future. We don't have any duty of care to you. And that's not just about COVID-19 and the jabs they've offered for COVID-19. That's for every jab they offer in the future. Their duty of care will change when you refuse the jabs they offer you next year, the year after, and the year after. For obesity, for diabetes, for kidney failure, whatever jab they come up with, that's the way it's going to be. Thanks so much to David Vance. Loved having him on. It's been so long since David was on. Great guy. And Richard and Fred Fairbrass, Right Said Fred. Lovely, lovely blokes. I'm delighted that they came back on the programme again today. Now, I'm back with you tomorrow. I have guests booked in. Excuse me, I can't tell you who they are now at this moment. But it'll be a busy programme tomorrow, Thursday, so join me at 5 o'clock. Do stay in touch with the programme through Twitter, BBG Richie, and my website, richieallen.co.uk. There are other articles on there of interest that I posted there this week. Leaving you with, of course, none other than the great Right Said Fred. See you tomorrow. Bye now. Bye.